done in much the same fashion. As best as you can, let the pictures or thoughts or other images that come, or words for that matter, for now let them be in the background. In a few weeks when we start to look directly at mind, we're going to work both with the word thoughts and with picture thoughts as a part of the meditation. But for this, at this point, let them be there, as you say. They're kind of there going on. And let most of your focus be to feel the breath, and those be in the background. And that's fine. You think in pictures. Some people here get no pictures, but they get a stream of words. Instead of Disney on, they just get someone reading the dictionary or old Russian novels or things like that. But let it be in the background. It is distracting, and it's okay. Please.
I found my body, it was either falling over and I jerked back, or it jerked, and that happened a number of times.
Yeah.
It was like each time I would not have been aware of my breath, and then would come back to it.
So your body would fall forward a little bit, and then you'd jerk back. Yeah. That is sleep. And one of the interesting things about sleep consciousness, in Buddhist psychology there's descriptions of all different kinds of consciousness. One of the functions of sleep consciousness that's absent is sleep consciousness does not have the capacity to hold the body erect. So that what happens is you start to get quiet, and some of you have had long days, you know, and you come and you sit to meditate, and really what the body says is, great, you know, it's quiet now. It must be bedtime, right? And so you start to sleep, and when a real moment of sleep comes, then you lose that for a second, and then your body feels it and it kind of wakes up again. What you can do with that, and again next week we're going to talk very directly about working with sleepiness and restlessness as part of the different feelings that come. For now, you can keep your eyes open a little bit if you wish. Anyone who feels tired or sleepy or feels that would be helpful, you can have them kind of half open, not looking around, but just letting in a little light from what's in front of you. That sometimes can help. Sort of sitting up straighter, but it's natural. Sitting, in a way, is a reflection. It's like looking in the mirror. And if you've had a very tiring day, when you sit down, what you'll see is sleep. Or if you've had a day where there's a lot of anxiety, when you first sit, what you will notice is anxiety. Or if there's a lot of emotion that's there in some way to be felt, as you sit, then you become aware of that. The sitting is really a way to see what is actually happening more clearly. So here you are. You've come to, for some of you, to start to learn to meditate, or others to learn this way. And we do this very simple thing of saying, all right, let's start by bringing the mind and body together. Instead of having the mind off in 20 other places, let's bring it back to the present. Does it want to stay for the most part? No. It does all kinds of things. Someone came up during the break and said, it starts to think about all these things that I need to do or solve problems. We get what I call creativity attacks. And because it's the first time you've been quiet in a while, all the books you're going to write and all the problems you're going to solve and so forth. And then you say, listen, just be on the breath. And it has 90 hours a day to think. And it's not satisfied. It says, no, I got to do it right now. And that's in part because it's a very powerful habit just to keep thinking all the time, that engine. It's also in part because we're afraid a little bit. I think inwardly we're not so familiar with or comfortable with what it means to be still and quiet. And we get a little nervous, and the first thing we do is begin to think. Now, what we're seeking in this kind of meditation is a stillness, an inner peace or stillness. There are two kinds of stillness. There's the stillness where you remove yourself from the world. You go off to a cave, or you close your eyes and you say something over and over and over and over again till you block everything out. That's the stillness away from things. The other kind, which is what this meditation directs us to, is rather a stillness in the midst of activity. So that we want to be still, but still aware of the breath. Aware when the mind wanders. Bring the puppy back, as we talked about last week. Puppy wanders away. Okay, stay. Try another time. Aware, as you'll see when we work with the body, and aware of the emotions in the heart. But finding a stillness or a centeredness in the midst of that. St. Francis de Sales put it this way. He said, if your heart wanders or is distracted, bring it back to the point quite gently. You don't want to beat the puppy. Bring it back to the point quite gently. And even if your heart wanders 1,000 times, though you brought it back every time it wandered, your hour would be very well employed. Because it's the very bringing back, it's the coming back to be here when you take a step, when you're on the beach, when you're writing, when you're speaking with another person. It's the getting here in the present that brings things to life, that allows us to see and to learn. So the first act in meditation isn't changing things, but it's just coming here to be in the present. Now, let's move on from there a bit. There's a story of Mullah Nasruddin, who is a wise man and fool and kind of Sufi character. And one day, a friend came to his house and asked to borrow his donkey. Mullah said, you can't borrow my donkey. I already lent it to someone else. And this man said, oh, that's a shame. I have this huge load that I have to carry to the market, all these things. And if I carry it by hand, it's just going to take me hours. And just using your donkey for a bit would help me so much. And he said, I'm sorry. You know, I lent it and can't help you. So his friend was leaving the house in the yard, and he heard a donkey bray in the backyard. Well, this was very suspicious. So he marched back into the house, up the steps, found Nasruddin, confronted him, and said, what do you mean to tell me your donkey isn't here, that you lent him out to somebody else? I heard him bray in the backyard. Very indignant. And Nasruddin looks back equally indignantly, and he says, well, who are you going to believe, me or the donkey? And in some way, in our lives, and certainly in people's spiritual life, there's a tendency to believe the ideas about things instead of the donkey, instead of the direct experience. And what meditation is about is relating to the direct experience and not to what we hope or imagine or fantasize or wish. So you come here and you start to sit, or you sit during the week at home, and what do you notice? You try to be aware of the breath, and then a number of people said their mind wanders. That's one thing you notice. What else is really obvious that you see? Anybody?
Your body goes crazy.
Ah, thank you. Yeah. The donkey. That's right. There's a wonderful Rumi poem. I don't have it here tonight, but he says, we've somehow mistaken the spiritual path. We put saddlebags on Jesus and let the donkey run loose in the pasture. We've placed our attention on the wrong thing. So the obvious thing that happens, for many people anyway, is that you sit and you try and be quiet and be aware of the breath, and your knees hurt, or your back hurts, or it itches, or you're hot, or you're cold, or your body starts moving, or you get restless, or a variety of other things. Anyone notice that? Now, since we're dealing with being aware, and this is the practice of mindfulness, we're going to then incorporate all of the energies of the body into the meditation. And the way it will be done is this. What we're going to do is sit, and as different energies arise, pleasant and unpleasant, tingling, vibration, hot, cold, pain, or whatever, when it gets stronger than the breath, we're going to take that sensation, leaving the breath aside, and focus on it, giving a name, hot, cold, cold, and really start to feel and relate with awareness to our body, to everything that's there. Now, one of the difficulties you'll find in starting to relate to your body is that people generally are conditioned not to want to relate to what's painful. It's okay if it's pleasant, and even then, some people are scared of the pleasant. You're scared of pleasure, too. I know some of you are out there. But even more than that, our habit is we're conditioned to be afraid of what's painful. That's very important. And if you look at our culture, we have a culture that is afraid of the dark, of the shadow, of the pain. And so we project it out on the Soviet Union or the Nicaraguans or somebody else who's bad. We do. What we do is we have air conditioning and thermostats for heat and really comfortable cars. I mean, everything has to be real comfortable, right? And heated pools. And for the most part, we put the freeways so they go around the ghettos so you don't have to see poor people. And old people who are too troublesome, we put in old age homes. Mental patients who used to be made part of village life and related to get locked up in hospitals, often when they don't need it, although sometimes they need some kind of asylum. Even our funerals, we dress our corpses up with makeup and fancy clothes like they were going to a banquet or something like that. It's different in some other countries. There in India, a body, it's honored, they put flowers on it, but it's a dead body. Do you know what I'm talking about in our culture? We're afraid, basically. And we don't face things very well. Our conditioning is a fear that we'll be overwhelmed, and so we push pain away. Now, is there some other way to relate? I was sitting in a meadow one day, out meditating in the country, and I was having kind of a la-di-da meditation. I was sitting and my mind was doing creative things and planning and feeling the breath a little, and just enjoying myself being somewhat quiet. And all of a sudden, a fly landed on my face. Well, the impulse is brush this away because it's unpleasant, isn't it? Tickles and so forth. And I was about to do that. I said, no, I teach this stuff. I'll stay with it. So I sit up a little straighter. Okay, and I'm just feeling the sensations, itching, tingling, or whatever, feeling that. Okay, then the fly moved to the edge of my nose, right? The edge of my nostril and my lips, because they're moist, right? And it was dry out there. It wanted that moisture. And so, take a breath. All right, I can do this. And I'm just staying there. And there's this fear that starts to come. It's like you're afraid you're going to sniff and inhale it or something like that, right? Some terrible, get the fly inside or whatever. There's this. So I'm just sitting there and I feel my belly quiver and the fear comes and then these steps. The fly stayed for 10 minutes at least. They had nothing better to do, obviously. And what was interesting is by the end of those 10 minutes, even in the middle of those, I wasn't planning. I wasn't doing my taxes. There was nothing creative. I wasn't worrying about anything. In fact, there was nothing else in the universe. There was only tiny little footsteps. That was it. And by the end of 10 minutes, I was more present and more centered, more concentrated than if I'd gone to a monastery for a month. I was very deeply present because I let myself stay with that. Am I making sense to you when I tell that story? So the idea of this meditation is going to be to begin to include that which arises in the body, in the difficult as well as the pleasant, and if it's strong, to let that actually help us to learn to be here in a centered and an open way. Now, as you sit, you will discover that there are three kinds of painful sensations that can arise for you. The first is a signal that there's something wrong. It's like your hand is in the fire. You sat the wrong way and it hurts a lot and it says, hey, change the way you're sitting. That's pretty infrequent, but once in a while you get that kind. The second is just unaccustomed posture. That you're sitting and you're not used to sitting still or cross-legged or however it is. And so sometimes it takes a bit of time for things to stretch out or for your back to feel comfortable being straight and not supported. And so you get some aches and pains from that. And that you kind of work with over some time, finding your posture. The third, the most frequent and useful kind of pain is pretty much all the rest. And that is when your shoulders hurt, or when your back hurts, or your jaw hurts, or your belly hurts, or other things like that. And here you are sitting, feeling your breath and minding your own sweet business, and your shoulders start to hurt. Why? Why should that be? or your back or your... Anyone?
Well, we always think there's something wrong.
Well, there's that. There's sometimes some discomfort comes with having a body. It's true. But why else? Why should things start to hurt?
Perhaps because we carry so much tension around that we don't notice.
That's also true. That when you sit, it's not like you're carrying a big pack up in the mountains after a day. It hurts. But you sit down just minding your business, trying to be quiet, and these places start to hurt, which in fact, in many of us, are tight all day long. We all have places where we stash our tension, and you probably know it in part, your jaw or your back or your belly or all of the above. And as we sit and start to come into the breath and the body, they show themselves. And so you start to feel the places which have contracted. Every time there's been stress or there's been some difficulty, it tightens and it locks in a certain tension or pain. And that starts to release. So what you can do as you sit, if you pay attention to these, is actually allow them to open. It's not that you're supposed to get rid of them, but that they're coming into awareness is a good sign. It means the pain you're feeling from them means you're starting to feel your body. And then if you allow it over some time, it starts to open. Now, it's not that you're supposed to sit and not have pain. Some sittings you might have pleasure and bliss, some that you might have pain. It's not that, just as you point out, that you're supposed to have a body and no pain. Anybody have that experience? You're on the wrong planet if you that's what you think. That's not Earth. Right? If you push the button and get out on the elevator that says Earth plane and you get one of these things with the wigglies on the end and two eyes and kind of lumbers around and so forth, you get about an equal measure of pleasure and pain. Anybody not have that? I don't know where you've been living. That is part of human life. And so what's important is not that we try and minimize or get rid of or ignore or run away, because then you can't live. You have to spend your whole life running away from half of life. But rather that we learn to relate to all of it from some wise place. You know the story of Mother Teresa? She was interviewed on British television by Malcolm Muggeridge, this British philosopher. And it was, as usual, a very inspiring interview. And at one point, he said near the end, you know, you do such good work, but in some way it must be easier for you. You're a nun, you don't own a house, you don't have a family, you don't have a car, you don't have insurance, you're not married. And she said, no, I'm married too. And held up the ring, which is the symbolic wedding of the nuns in her order to Christ, she said. And he can be very difficult sometimes. And she was serious, you know. So if it's hard for Mother Teresa, guess what? That's right, it's hard for everybody. The point is not whether you're going to have pleasure and pain. You will. But how do we relate to it? Do we close off? Do we fight it? Do we push it away? Do we hate it? Do we tense up and lock ourselves away from it or spend our time running away? In a sense, how do we touch our pain with fear and with loathing? That's half of our life. Or can we touch it with our hearts, with some compassion or some tenderness or mercy or understanding? What becomes important as you pay attention to the body is not the ideas of how you think it should be, but feeling as directly as you can, what do the sensations feel like? Maybe you've never let yourself feel a knee pain before. Is it tingly? Is it pinpricks? Is it fire? Is it twisting? It's not going to kill you. Won't hurt you. Then how about feeling restlessness, or how about feeling tightness or tiredness? We have it a lot. Let's see if we can begin to relate to it from a kind heart and wakefully, rather than just to run away. Now, in order to do this, beside kindness or tenderness or some willingness to let your heart open to all of this, there's another quality that's needed. St. Francis de Sales said, what you need is a cup of understanding, a barrel of love, and an ocean of patience. It's not even the love, alone. There was one Zen master who named Su Yun, who died in China in 1958. There are pictures and tape recordings of his talks and books about him. He was the Dharma head of the five Zen sects of China, all of them. And in 1958, when he died, he was 120 years old. He was born in 1838. He lived to age 120. And there's this record of the last retreat he led in Shanghai before he was killed, actually, in one of those communist purges or something like that. And he got people together and he said, what you need if you want to undertake spiritual path is a quality that is described as a long-enduring mind. He said, take me, for example. I went to a monastery when I was 14. I was interested in this, and my mother sent me to a monastery. And I spent 15 years with this great Zen master training. And then he sent me to another master for 10 years. And at that point, I was in my 30s. And I decided to see the holy places. So I walked to India. This was like in 1860 or 70. Walked around the Holy Land, and then I came back. I went to Mount Kailash in Tibet and spent 3 years walking around it, bowing every three steps, just to purify my heart. Then I came back to a Pure Land monastery where we chanted for 10 years. It was beautiful, and I learned many things. Then I thought my Zen training was incomplete, so I went back to the monastery of the patriarch of that time. Spent 15 years further training with him. Then at age 70, I began to teach. And I've taught for the past 50 years or so. He said, so you who are beginning today, he's speaking to these Chinese people, he said, put it in perspective, please. What you are seeking to do is to, has the possibility of transforming your heart and your life and your mind and your being. You've had millions, if not millions of lifetimes, millions of moments of thoughtlessness or of automatic pilot or of habitual conditioning. It's not going to happen right away. There is no McMeditation. You know, you can't drive in, order it, and come out. It's not that way. If you wanted to learn piano, how long would it take you to learn to play well? Certainly some years and a lot of lessons and practice. And first you'd play crude songs and then you'd play a little better and then you could play with a band and maybe you could play with a symphony after 5 or 10 years of thousands of hours. How about if you want to become a really good computer programmer or a good oil painter or a good anything we value, pretty much? It's the same for the inner arts. It's not something that's quick. And in a way that helps. You know how it helps? You can relax. You don't have to be idealistic. If you sit, I sat a whole week now, 20 minutes a day, right? And I'm still not getting it. My mind is still wandering. Take it easy. I promise you, it works. I play piano for 20 minutes a day for a week. I can't play. What's wrong? You know? Or tennis. I went and I had a lesson and then I played a couple hours this week. I should have a good game. When we sit, what we see is a reflection of our body and mind. And that you see physical tension or that you see the mind wander a lot or you see lots of images or so forth, that's terrific. It means you're starting to feel what's going on inside. And that's the very place to start. Then we can begin to relate to that with some wisdom. Now, the thing about patience is, it's not exactly the right word. Because patience implies if you're a good boy or a good girl and you wait long enough, you get rewarded. A better word, said Suzuki Roshi, the San Francisco Zen master some years ago. He said, a better word than patience is the word constancy. It's simply that we begin to be willing to sit and relate to what's there, whatever it happens to be. That actually is the practice. It's not to change it so much as is to find a way to sit and begin to relate to whatever is present. Our fears, our tension, the pleasure, the happiness, the quiet, the disturbance, all of those things. To give it a loving reception. To receive or touch it, touch our pain, our tension, our emotions, our fear, all the things in our life especially the difficult ones, with our heart. To use a meditation to soften ourselves so that we can be more alive. There's a famous Tibetan mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. It's written on the stones all over Tibet, on the walls of monasteries, on prayer flags, everywhere. Om is the universal sound, and so is Hum. And the meaning of the mantra, one translation, is the jewel is in the lotus. And what it means, in one sense anyway, the jewel is the mind, and the lotus is the heart. And it means that the mind and the heart come together. Instead of the mind being off everywhere, that our mind and our attention is centered in our heart so that we receive things through the heart. The head and heart are not apart, is a translation. And this is really what the earth needs more than anything else. More kindness. Probably more than any other thing, even more than all the other noble things one could think of. Something very, very basic. An ability to touch the complexity and the pain and pleasure and sweet and sorrow, the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows with the heart of kindness. So the spirit tonight that I wanted to communicate about meditation is that it's really a process of healing. That there's a healing to it, not so much that you're going to sit and change yourself. I don't think you will very much. You are who you are. I'm sorry to tell you this. This is sort of the bad news. Body, personality, etc. You got it. You were born, you were issued one, and that's it, right? You can jog it and hot tub it and kind of polish up your personality, but that's it. What you can do is learn to live with a free and a wise heart and a great sense of inner compassion and balance. The things that a Buddha or Jesus or whoever you might admire. They were all weird. I know a lot of enlightened people, or so-called, being in the trade. I've met many Zen masters and many lamas and swamis and mamas and all of those kinds, you know what? And they're as eccentric as any other group, if not more so. That's not what it's about. It's first of all learning how to be here, and that's why we're starting with the breath, and beginning to learn a wise and a clear relationship to what's present. And in that, finding some place that's more authentic in our being to rest. So shall we sit again and then take some time for questions? How would that be? Yeah. This is the beginning of the second week of a 70-year project. Again, finding a way to be stable and comfortable. There's enough physical distractions and pain that you can try to sit quite comfortably and then deal with what arises. There'll be plenty. And we're going to shift the instructions for this sitting. So the instructions will be this. Again, you'll sit up straight and let your body hang in a relaxed fashion from your spine. The eyes and face are soft and the shoulders and hands relaxed wherever they're comfortable. We'll again use the breath as the center of the meditation. Letting yourself feel the in-breath wherever it shows itself and the out-breath. Feeling the coolness, the swirls, the tingling, the itching, the pressure, the movement in the chest or the belly, wherever it is. Many of you may just settle on one place. You might just want to feel your belly or just feel your nose or your lips. And that will be the center of the meditation. However, as you sit and feel the breath, if there should arise any strong body sensations, tingling, itching, a fly on your nose, a pain in your knee, tension in the shoulders, heat, you feel very hot, cold if you feel cold, any of the energies of the body, and they get strong. Let go of the breath and bring your attention to feel them fully. Receive them with awareness and kindness, and give them a name. So you name hot, hot, or itching, 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 or tingling, tingling, or pain, or needles, needles, or whatever it is. Feel it as carefully as you can. I'm going to ask you what it felt like afterward. Paying attention as it changes, in a relaxed way, even if it's difficult. And then when it passes away, going back to the next breath. So you alternate feeling the breath, or else allowing the sensations when they're strong, when they're stronger than the breath, to become a part of the meditation for that time. Notice the breath, letting it be natural and feeling with care the beginning or middle or end, however the breath shows itself to you, coming back to it whenever the mind wanders away. As you feel the breath, if there arises any sensations, any energy in the body that is strong, that calls your awareness, receive it with the same mindfulness and kindness that you feel the breath. Whatever it is, naming it. Hot, hot, itching, pain, pain. And feeling it fully. Coming back to the breath or body whenever the mind wanders. Being just here with it as you experience this moment. one more minute, stay present. So we take a few minutes for questions and comments. How was it for you to begin to include the body as part of the meditation? Did that help or difficult?
What was extraordinary for me is to realize that this is the body I have. I mean, I felt like that was a philosophy. I have never felt such discomfort. Mind to itch and tear off my sweater. And really, I mean, and just because my attention, I allowed my attention to include it.
To feel your body, and there's all this stuff going on that you weren't aware of. Now, you know, it's interesting. I've spent some time in the last couple of weeks with two friends who are members of our Sangha, or community that sits together, who are dying. And both of them, fortunately, are not in a lot of pain. One has cancer, been sick for a lot of years, and healed herself for a long time. It's time to die. She's ready. And the other has AIDS, and he's had it for 5 years. He's known it, and going through a process. They're both pretty restless. They're not in much pain. But there's a lot else going on in their body. And what we work with, in part, is what they've learned in meditation about how to be with their body, even though it's less comfortable and more restless. And it's serving them very well, I can tell you, although it's still not always easy. Other people, please.
Oh, I noticed what she said about talking about our disposition towards wanting to feel good things instead of feeling bad. When I would feel pain and I would focus on that, when it would go away, it would be like, oh, that's good. Now it's better to feel this feeling than it was to feel the other feeling.
Yeah, you can see how strong that habit is. And it's natural in a way that we're attracted to pain and push away pleasure. But what it does as it builds up is it makes our life way out of balance. We can't stay centered. Now, there's a secret teaching that you need to receive at this point. I thank you for bringing up what you did. About working with painful sensations when they come in the body. When you pay attention to them, they will do one of three things. They will go away. They will stay the same for a while. Or they will get worse. Right? And that's not your job. Your job, as you point out, is just to be with it and let it come as it comes and go as it goes. And sometimes it'll be pleasant and sometimes it won't. Please.
Well, I noticed that I definitely had something else to pay attention to other than, you know, I mean, my mind could race now in an appropriate way.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of thinking about all the things that I should have done or could have done or should do or have to do this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, I mean, I noticed that there's still a lot of activity, but that I can channel it in a way that at least at this moment is acceptable within me.
So it gave your mind, the busy mind, something more to pay attention to in some way by feeling the body. In fact, some people find that after they've sat, I teach many 10-day retreats with hundreds of people who come to them, that after a few days of sitting and being with their mind and their body, there'll be times when they wish that their knee would hurt so that they don't have to watch their mind do everything that it's doing yet one more hour. Not because the pain is all that exciting, but it's better than being aware of what goes on in their minds. It's really funny. Anyone else? Breath, body, please.
I notice that as I'm able to follow my breath for longer periods of time, I have this sort of like energy surges that feel really pleasant and really good. And as that increases, I tend to become uncomfortable with it. And I think, as you said, that the stillness, it's not something I'm used to, and even though it's pleasurable, it's frightening.
It's scary. So you sit and you have energy releases that start to build up, and they can come in many forms. Sometimes it will feel inwardly like there's just a tingling or a thrill or some rapture. And if you're not used to that, that's scary, and your mind will start thinking so it doesn't have to feel it and feel how out of control the body is. But guess what? Its heart is doing it itself. Its liver is doing it itself already. You know, it's breathing itself most of the time. It is. It runs itself. But it's scary to recognize that. Or there may be even more powerful releases. Certain times your body will shake, or your shoulders or things will move spontaneously. And if you've never experienced that, that also can be frightening, like you're losing control of yourself. I sat in one very long retreat I did for more than a year in one room, where I just sat and walked for a year with this teacher I'd see every couple of days for 15 minutes for instruction. The rest of the time I was just alone, and I would sit for an hour and then walk for an hour, and the whole instruction was just to pay attention to what happened. I saw everything. You name it. It was there. But anyway, at one point, a lot of energy released, and my arms started to flap like a chicken, like this, or whatever it was. And I couldn't stop them for about a day and a half. I just sat there flapping away, you know, and pushed them down, and then they do that. And I don't know what I was in whatever life, or even if I believe in that, but there was something going on anyway. You know, and then that went away, and something else comes. There are 100 different strange body sensations that come. You can feel light like you're floating, or heavy like you're stone, or your breath feels like it twists through your body, or you get tingles or flashes of coldness or heat or all kinds of things. They're really side effects as the body starts to open. But initially they're a little frightening, and as you get used to it, you can open more to the whole range of human physical experience. Sometimes you also feel like you're floating so realistically that you have to open your eyes and peek to make sure that you're still on the ground. It can feel that. To peek, to make sure that you hadn't grown 3 feet in the last. Exactly. All these kinds of things are common, and they're side effects, and you get used to them. Some people don't have them at all, and for some people they come more frequently. The most important thing is not those, but rather whether we're able to find a place that is centered, and that where we touch a deeper place of our being. The layers of tension and the fears and those things, they are there and you'll encounter them. It's like a whole superficial layer of our life, and it's important. But underneath it, one can connect with a place of centeredness and awareness that gives you a strength and a place in your heart to live from that does well through all the changes of your life. There's a story, if you want to do this, there's a story that illustrates what's necessary, however. There was a chicken and a hog walking down a road one morning, friends, and they said to one another, "Gee, we're hungry, let's go have breakfast." The other one said, "Yeah, all right, there's a cafe over there, let's try that place." So they saunter up and look in the window, and there is the menu, and it says, ham and eggs. Now, they both have some pause at that moment, as you can imagine, and think about it seriously, and finally the chicken says, "Come on, let's go in and eat." And the hog says, "No way." He says, "From you, they just want a donation. But for me, it's total commitment." For you to learn something of any depth in meditation, like learning to play piano well, or learning computer programming really well, or learning oil painting well, or learning one of a wonderful variety of things, you have to bring your heart and your spirit and your body and your time and energy to it. You have to practice in some regular way. And then as you do, you will face the pains and the pleasant sensations, the changing movements of the breath, the times when you're afraid, the times when you're peaceful, and you'll begin to learn how to work with all those parts of your experience. Doesn't matter what happens when you sit this week. Make a regular time, I'll review what I said last week, of 15 or 20 minutes at minimum each day. Morning or evening is okay. Find a regular place and sit there. And your job is to sit and take what you get. Work with your breath as best you can. Receive whatever the body has. It'll show you what it needs to show you, to be aware of. And learn how to work with that as best you can. And some days you'll feel very successful, and some days the judging mind will say, this is worse than the beginning, I'm getting nowhere. That's fine. Thank you for your opinion. Just go back and sit. So it really comes more from just doing it than it does from anything else. Does that make sense to you? I hope it does. Also, what can be helpful if you're interested, there are some good books on meditation. I have several. There's one called Seeking the Heart of Wisdom, which I recommend. I did with Joseph Goldstein. Another book that's good is Thich Nhat Hanh's book, The Miracle of Mindfulness. A third book that's good is Stephen Levine's book, A Gradual Awakening. Those are a few books you might look at. Can I read you a poem as a way to end tonight? This you may have heard. It's from a woman named Nadine Stair, who is 85 years old from Louisville, Kentucky. She says, if I had my life to live over, and it has something to do with what we're beginning to practice here, I'd like to make more mistakes next time. I'd relax and limber up. I'd be sillier than I've been this trip. I'd take fewer things seriously and take more chances. I would climb more mountains and swim more rivers. I'd eat more ice cream and less beans. I'd have perhaps more actual troubles, but I'd have far fewer imaginary ones. You see, I'm one of those people who live sensibly and sanely, hour after hour, day after day. Oh, I've had my moments. And if I had it to do over again, I'd have more of them. In fact, I'd try to have nothing else, just moments, one after another, instead of living so many years ahead of each day. I've been one of those persons who never goes anywhere without a thermometer, a hot water bottle, a raincoat, and a parachute. If I had it to do again, I'd travel lighter than I have. If I had my life to live over, I would start barefoot earlier in the spring and stay that way later in the fall. I would go to more dances. I would ride more merry-go-rounds. I would pick more daisies. And in some way, what the training of meditation is about is really a training of becoming alive to our breath and to the full experience of our body and our heart and our mind, and living in that awareness or aliveness in a greater way. And each of us has that potential. It's not something that's someplace else or some other country or monastery or tradition or anything. It's really our human birthright. And when we touch it, even for a moment, with another person or out seeing the blossoms on the plum trees and the cherry trees, even for a moment when we touch that, we know how wonderful it is. I mean, it's very real to us. And it's really nourishing that in a long and deep way in our life.
This concludes the second class on the inner art of meditation. Our program continues with the third class in this 5-part series with Jack Kornfield.
The past 2 weeks, for just a very brief review, I started by just speaking of my own background and interest in meditation. I trained as a Buddhist monk in various countries of South and Southeast Asia, as well as a psychologist in graduate school here. And I'm really interested in finding a language and an appropriate way to teach and communicate about meditation so that it works in people's lives, so that it's actually useful in a Western culture. And over this course of 5 weeks, we started on the first night with working with awareness of the breath and using that as a way to center or become present. The first part of spiritual practice is just that you need to become present. You must be present to win, as it said in Las Vegas. And then after centering and using the breath to steady or concentrate, we then opened last week to include working with the energies and sensations of the body, pleasure and pain and itching and hot and cold, and really feeling what it's like to live in this human body with a mindful attention. What we're seeking in this meditation, it's called insight meditation or understanding, doesn't come from putting our attention on an image of Buddha or a deity or a light or a candle or some celestial thing or some sacred words, all of which are useful in their own ways, but we're seeking to develop a stillness in the midst of activity, seeking to find a meditative awareness that includes our breath and our body sensation, and as we continue, the feelings of the heart and the thoughts in the mind, our activities, we'll do an eating and a walking meditation, so that meditation becomes a way of being rather than some exercise. And from the very first night, we talked as well about the context within which meditation works, and that it is based on a ground of awareness of all the aspects of one's life, which is called traditionally non-harming or virtue. That right speech, being conscious and kind or careful with one's words, with one's actions, is as much a part of meditation as anything you do with your eyes closed. Or to put it crudely, as I did, it's very hard to sit and meditate after a day of stealing and lying. How we live is directly connected with our capacity to quiet or to open or to see truthfully within ourselves. There's a story of Mullah Nasruddin, the Sufi wise man and fool and comedian and teacher all rolled into one. One day he was out in his garden sprinkling breadcrumbs around. And a neighbor came by and said, "Why are you doing that?" And Nasruddin said, "Well, I do it to keep the tigers away." And the neighbor said, "But there aren't any tigers within thousands of miles of here." And Nasruddin looked up and said, "Very effective, isn't it?" We often, in undertaking a spiritual practice, can get the idea that it's some rote thing that you do. You follow the breath and feel enough breath, or you say a sacred mantra, or you do a prayer over and over, like sprinkling crumbs in the garden, and somehow something good will come of it. In fact, what's necessary for meditation is more deeply a spirit of discovery or inquiry. You will sit and have all kinds of experiences come, and the process is to pay attention and begin to see what is within us and what are the laws that govern our breath and our body and our happiness and our suffering or our bondage and our freedom. It takes as well a fair amount of courage to do it. You inevitably confront your difficulties in meditation. Someone asked Ramakrishna at one point, "Why is there evil in the world?" And he said, "To thicken the plot." Okay. It makes it interesting. If you want to understand your life in the world, you have to actually begin to work with or face the difficulties, as well as those things which are beautiful and easy. So this last week, as I said, we work with, as you recall, the sensations of the body and the various energies. How was that? Let's take a little more time for questions. When you sat, was there pain or itching or hot or cold or tingling or things like that that came up? And did you find an ability to work with it? Anyone? Please.
When I sat like this, I had a very sharp pain in my lower back, mm-hmm. which didn't really dissipate by noticing it, mm-hmm. And sort of got worse as the time went on. And then I switched my posture to sitting like with both legs back like that, and it seemed to dissipate some. So in a way, I thought, like, maybe I should go back to the other way and experience the pain. But and then itching and stuff like that would come up. And as I noticed that would dissipate.
Mm-hmm. Remember I said last week that when you pay attention, one of three things will happen. It will go away, it will stay somewhat the same, or it will get worse, and that's not so much your job. However, it's useful to experiment with posture. So if you sat in a particular way, and you had a constant and fair amount of back pain of a certain kind, and you changed your posture, and you could sit more comfortably, it's quite fine to do that. There is enough pain, or there's enough difficulty in life without manufacturing it artificially. There'll be plenty more where that came from, right? That's fine. Sitting on the floor, on the cushion, squatting, using one of these little prayer benches or something, many people find a bit more energetic a posture than sitting in a chair. If you tend to be sleepy or dreamy and you sit in a chair, there's a tendency to go off in fantasy or reverie. And so part of experimenting with posture also is to find a way that's comfortable, but which also keeps you awake. So you can play with that. That's fine, though. That sounds good. Anyone else, please?
Whether it was focusing on breath or posture or sensation, sometimes what would happen would be a solution, and my mind would want to think about it and work it out.
There comes, I don't know if I used this phrase last time, you get sometimes creativity attacks, which is to say that when you become quiet, some deeper levels of reflection or understanding or things that are dormant that really want to be expressed or understood will come. And that's natural. Sometimes you can spend a little bit of time with it, but it's not a very good habit to make in general in meditation, because it's easy to fill the mind. If you haven't noticed, it's full most of the time. And really, what's useful is to let it empty or let it be, let go of that. There's lots of other hours to do it. And instead to try to listen in a very different way without so much solving problems, but more deeper listening. So it's natural that it would have come, and you might do it a bit, but in the long run, it's useful then to see that and say, I'll thank you later, I'll get back to you, and then come back to the breath and the body.
So is that the idea of mindfulness?
Mindfulness is really to be aware or present with what's here. Mindfulness means to notice what's present. So with that, and we'll get to it in another week, you can actually be aware of the mental processes. And you could say, well, now there's a creative process happening. The problem with the mental processes and why we leave them to the fourth week is that they're very seductive. And instead of simply noticing that it's there, then you tend to get on the train and take the ride to St. Louis or Atlanta or wherever the train is going and have the whole party. And then a little while later you wake up and say, boy, that was a 3-day train ride. And you really lose yourself, in which case you're not really mindful. Other people, sensations or whatever.
I would be paying attention to my breath. And I found myself forgetting what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. And then what would happen?
Then I'd remember for a little bit, then I'd forget right again.
That's a perfect description of meditation. That in some way, meditation is called remembering or self-remembering. It's a waking up, being present with the breath or the body, and then you forget. Some people forget by having a lot of thoughts, whether they're creative or problem-solving or memories or whatever. And then after a while, you wake up and realize you're in San Diego and it's time to come back to be actually here in Marin or wherever you live. Sometimes you literally forget and you don't know where you are or what you're doing, which sounds more like your kind of forgetting. And then you come back and you wake up and you remember, oh, yes, I'm meditating. And then you reestablish your attention. It's quite natural. And part of the process is nourishing or strengthening that capacity to wake up. While you're asleep or when you've forgotten, there's not much you can do. You're gone. But when you wake up, at that moment you can say, all right, let me try to be here again. Let me feel the breath. Let me be aware of what's in this moment, what the body experiences it like. And as you do, gradually you can be present longer and longer. And it starts to string together more until you can start to live more here and less in the place of forgetfulness or fantasy or memory. It's not that thought and planning and remembering are bad. We need them. They're essential. But they take up 90% or 95% or 98% of our life and our time. we could do with a lot less of it and actually live more fully. So that's a beautiful description of meditation. Let's do our first sitting. Again, find a way to sit which is comfortable physically, where you are grounded, where you can sit still in a steady way. Did you find as you sat this week in general that being able to include sensations in the body was helpful to you?
Yes.
Yeah. So as we open the field of awareness gradually, step by step, we'll include more things and it becomes useful in every area that you can pay attention. So now having taken a posture that's comfortable or stable, let your eyes close gently. Let your back be relatively straight. And the rest of the body relax, the eyes and face be soft, the shoulders and arms, hands relaxed. Let the belly be soft. This combination of being alert or erect on one hand and relaxed. And we'll continue as we did this past week again, by working with the breath and the sensations of the body for this time. And then the next sitting this evening will expand the meditation. So feel the presence of your body, the contact with the floor, the sensations, the sounds. Get yourself to be here in the moment. And as you do, become aware of the fact of your breathing, this ever-present life breath. Feeling the sensations of it wherever you notice it, and even if it becomes quite soft, letting your attention become soft and careful. You can say in and out softly in the background, if you wish. But most important is to feel the breath. And as you do, if there should arise any strong body sensations, pain, pleasure, tingling, hot, cold, itching, throbbing. When they're strong and pull your awareness away from the breath, let go of the breath and name them, receiving them, feeling them fully. Itching, itching, pain, pain. Noticing with the same care how they move and change in your body. Staying with them until they disappear or until you feel quite balanced or accustomed to them, and then return back again to the next breath. Sometime with the breath and sometime with the sensations of the body. if the mind wanders away, whenever you become aware of that, let go gently and come directly back to the next breath or to whatever strong sensation is present. Returning back to the present moment, steadying, concentrating, being here in this moment. Notice what's present with a gentle and careful attention. Notice the beginning, the middle, or the end of the breath. Feeling the sensations carefully. Or what arises in the body, be with it as directly as you can, experiencing right to the middle of it, naming, being present. One more minute. Stay very present.